What's up, trade crew? Welcome back to the HVAC R&D podcast hosted by HVAC Rhino. It's been a hectic 2 months post AHR, but it's about time to get back in the saddle and get this show back underway. Luckily, I have a great guest tonight to help me out with that. So without further ado, let's get it going. Yeah, come on. Everybody, thank you for coming back to the show. HVAC R&D is currently looking for our next Powered By sponsor, so if you're interested, please reach out via HVACR&D.com and I will send you our 2024 press kit. Additionally, we are supported by platinum sponsor One Thing Marketing, your trusted marketing partner for helping you make your business successful through all means necessary. Reach out, schedule a meeting with them today through their link in the HVACR&D.com vendor hub, because one thing can change everything. I'm also grateful to the AHR Expo and Bosch Home Comfort USA for their support to lead and be a part of the 2024 AHR Workforce Development Team. We were working with the Chicago Prosser Career Academy and High School, a local high school with a dedicated HVAC program, helping to bring the next group of tradespeople to the industry. Additionally, thanks to my company Insight Partners, Hobbs & Associates, and our family of brands for their support with me on this venture, as well as to Melissa Chesney and the Moore Sales Corporation for their additional boots on the ground support in Chicago. If this is your first time listening to the show, I welcome you. Thank you for taking the time to come and listen and spend some time with me. And HVAC R&D is based in North Carolina, and we are focused on research and development within the trades. The main objective is the pursuit of building a better, more knowledgeable community of HVAC professionals and fellow tradespeople by learning from the past and embracing new advances in the industry to help us all be better for the future. If you're not following us online, you can find the show on Instagram and TikTok at HVAC.R&D. You can also find us on LinkedIn, TradeDowns, and Facebook as the HVAC R&D Podcast. And if you're not listening to the weekly shows, you can find them on Apple Music, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify, and another 20 streaming platforms. So please follow us, like and rate the show, leave us a review, share us with your trade crew. Again, if you want to work with us, please send me a contact form through HVACR&D.com. Also, take a look at the swag shop while you're on the website. You can still use discount code AHR for 25% off all purchases when you visit the swag shop. And then also, please join the mailing list at the bottom of the page. So, shameless self-plug over, as I always say. I feel like that's a record. Got done in about 2.5 minutes. Usually takes a little bit longer. But I want to introduce you to a very special guest today. Mr. Richard has went from Wall Street through the service industry and everywhere in between. He is the founder and CEO of Redwood Services, and he joins me to discuss how he is building a team of partner service businesses through alignment of shared values and vision. So Richard, thank you for coming to the show, and I'm very excited to have you with me today. Thank you. I can't unmute you for some reason.
How about now?
There he is. All right.
Well, you muted me. I didn't mute myself, so.
I know, and then it wouldn't let me unmute you. I guess my microphone just liked my sultry voice.
Oh, I'm here. I was checking out your merch store while you were doing your intro remarks, looking at this beer pong set.
I know, right? How sweet is that? That was I didn't know how good it would sell, but it just seemed like it fit the mood of this show.
Yeah.
You know, because we like to get on here, crack a beer, have a good time, and enjoy the trades and service business that we're in, and, you know, just talk about our experiences. So
I could use that right now.
Well, you wanna get us started with your HVAC brew of the week?
Yeah, let's do it.
Crack that thing. Let's see what we got.
What are you drinking?
So I am drinking a Bitchin' Betty Brown Ale. It's from Armored Cow Brewing. We try to do a good job of bringing local brews onto the show. So let's see how this thing goes. There it is.
Did you put the can up to the microphone for extra dramatic effect?
It's close. It's right down below it. So got a nice 16-ounce pint, 5.4%. And let's see. Bitchin' Betty is a slang term used by some pilots and air crews. God, I can hardly read this can. I might have to add this one in later. I can't read this thing for nothing. That happens when you're blind.
Are you sure that's your first beer of the day?
I am positive it is. Oh, here we go. A little bit better light. So, Bitchin' Betty is a slang term used by some pilots and air crew, mainly North American, referring to the voices used by some aircraft warning systems. The enunciation voice in at least some aircraft systems may be either male or female, and in some cases this may be selected according to pilot preference. So Bitchin' Betty is the warning sound, apparently. They definitely should warn people that this is a very drinkable brown ale. That's what they should warn people about.
Nice.
So what do you got, my friend?
I have a local beer from a company called Wiseacre here in Memphis.
Nice.
It's a beer called Tiny Bomb, and it's pretty popular here around these parts, and I thought I would go local, so I got my Tiny Bomb ready to go.
I like it.
All right, let me open it as loud as you did for that dramatic effect. How was that?
That was a good one.
Yeah,
now I just need
one.
To add some reverb.
And a good thing it's 5 o'clock here on a Friday, so just in time to crack a beer.
No, it is time. It's 5 o'clock on a Friday. It is decided to pour the rain here. I don't know if it's raining where you are. I felt bad because right as the rain started, I heard my neighbor crank up his lawnmower, and I said, that's going to be a fun 30 minutes.
Yep, it is raining here as well.
So I know the last several weeks I have been busy trying to just kind of get things back in order here. Had a lot of updates with the show. But what you've been working on lately? Anything fun with the family, especially since it's, what, St. Paddy's Day weekend? Do you guys do anything special for this time of year?
I spend a majority of my time just trying to survive at home with the four kids that I have. And so I work pretty hard during the day. And then when I leave work, I think that's when the real job starts. I have four kids, ages 13, 10, 7, and 2.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's just,
you got the whole game.
It's just a matter of survival.
Now, are your kids playing sports the way you did growing up? Or, you know, is basketball running the family genes? And I'm getting ahead of you a little bit, but.
No, but I think so. Like, my kids love sports. My daughter, who's 13, she's super athletic and is into basketball. And then my boys, they're all over the place. They like to play everything. They're good at nothing, but they love every sport. So if you went into my garage right now, you would just see hockey stuff, football stuff, basketball stuff, baseball stuff. And they haven't kind of found the one that they want to focus on yet.
Now, are they playing like roller hockey, or are they playing legit ice hockey?
No. I mean, neither. They see a sport on TV, then they get into it for a couple weeks. They buy the accessories, so they're playing floor hockey in the driveway, and then, like, you know, 2 weeks later they're into baseball, and so we're throwing baseballs in the front yard.
Well, and that's kind of how it almost takes kind of messing with all of them to figure out which one you do like.
Yeah, I agree.
I was a baseball and soccer guy. I stopped growing when I was like 12, so basketball never really would have made sense for me. I was not going to be Muggsy Bogues. I wish, but no.
Yeah, I think, you know, first of all, I think playing sports is important and it helps make you well-rounded. And I just want them to do something, and I want that sport to be a team sport. So as they can pick whatever they're into, but you know, it's something that is a value of ours in our home.
Well, and I think it is to a lot of tradespeople. You know, it builds teamwork, which is very important when you get into our industry, but you know, it also builds leadership and, you know, even self-determination, because in order for you to be the best teammate, you've also got to be the best athlete you can be in order to do so, because it's hard to support your fellow teammates if you're not trying as hard as they are.
And it teaches you discipline, you know, time management. So there's a bunch of values that come out of sports that I think help you in life, in your work, with your family. So there's just a bunch of benefits.
No, that's the truth. Trying to think, the last time I even got into playing any kind of competitive stuff, I went and played a couple of pickup indoor games with a couple of guys that managed one of the Mexican restaurants that my wife and I used to go to. And man, I got absolutely ran to death. It had been so long since I had played, and I was more than a few steps behind everybody.
Yeah, that happens.
But no, it was fun. Lately, on the work side, I've had a bunch of jobs that are kind of in between spaces. So I kind of dabble through a bit of everything. The company that I work for, we do everything from residential small stuff all the way through light commercial and into big, heavy industrial. We just became a Johnson Controls chiller parts or aftermarket parts rep for most of the East Coast. So I've been doing some research and kind of starting to learn that side of the industry. You know, most of my, you know, even growing up and then most of my wholesale career initially was residential light commercial. So when I moved last year, one of my biggest reasons for moving was it gave me the opportunity to kind of start to learn the bigger stuff and the other things that I didn't know a lot about. So there's been a lot of constant education that I'm working to catch myself up on with that stuff.
And how different has it been learning that new side of the industry?
It's been, in some cases, it's been a bit of a challenge. Not for, you know, I understand most of the terminology and I understand what stuff is, but I've never really gotten into a lot of heavy, hydronic stuff. So that's really where, you know, the learning curve is taking a little bit more time. And just, you know, understanding the difference between, you know, air-cooled chillers, water-cooled chillers, understanding dedicated outdoor air systems. There's still a lot of things that I don't know yet about fan walls and other different things that we do. So it's constant. It's a constant ability to grow your, I guess you could say, your repertoire of what you have to go out and sell with. But at the same time, it's also, you know, moving over here, you know, I have a big responsibility to move business that was mine before if I can, but as well as to also grow new residential business, because we're trying to build that side of our company. You know, we've got a lot of different divisions that kind of all cross paths and work together. Which in your case, I know you worked in the past with, you know, a company that had a whole bunch of different moving parts that kind of were interconnected as well. So I know exactly what you mean when it comes to that kind of stuff. But it's not been, I think, as difficult of a learning curve as I thought, but I think it has taken longer than I expected, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, that's one part of this industry that, you know, is my weakest. I'm not technical. I grew up in the home services industry, you know, more from the 30,000 foot view strategy. And I've just never gotten into the technical side. And honestly, I don't know that I will, but there's plenty of people way smarter than me within Redwood that are super smart on that stuff.
And it's funny you say that. You know, I've said that a bunch of times on this show over the years. You know, when I was growing up in the industry, I got put where I was most effective for the time, you know, my dad had me to do things. So a lot of the time, you know, it was running a new construction crew or installing or something like this. I never really spent a ton of time in service because, you know, it's hard to get, you know, get your head wrapped around service in 2 months of the summer and then you go right back out of it. And then you're not really doing service again for, you know, 8-9 months. It kind of, you lose it. It's almost like you start over. So a lot of times, unfortunately, I missed that technical service side of things outside of just your basic, you know, install, low voltage hookups and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So tell me how you got into the trades. You went to school and that was not the initial plan, but you kind of fell into it later. So kind of tell me how you got to where you are.
Yeah, sure. So I was born and raised here in Memphis, Tennessee, and went to school in New York City, which was an awesome place to go to college. I majored in finance and did what most of the finance majors did, and that was try to get a job on Wall Street upon graduation. And so my first job out of school was for a large investment bank in New York City. And I did that and quickly learned like that was not gonna be for me. I did not enjoy it at all. And so I spent about a year and a half in New York in finance, and then decided that I wanted to move back to Memphis. I was married at that point. My wife is also from Memphis. And so I started looking to move home. And at the time, there was, I think, the largest home services company in the country was headquartered in Memphis. And that business was called ServiceMaster. And so I started researching ServiceMaster, and I just growing up loved the services industry. I think it's, you can understand it. You can put your hands around it. There's, you know, when you're in finance, it's number one, it's very complex, and it's a computer and there's numbers and there's not these tangible customers and tangible technicians and call centers. And I just love everything about home services. And so I started researching ServiceMaster, and they had just been acquired by private equity, and it started a new group called the Strategy Group. And this group sat at the parent company of ServiceMaster and supported all of the brands that were in the ServiceMaster family. And so I got an interview with this Strategy Group, got the job, and in late 2008, moved back to Memphis and joined ServiceMaster and started learning the home services industry. And I didn't know much about it and didn't know if this was going to be a 2-year stint in my career or not. And it turned out that I fell in love with this industry, and I haven't looked back. That was, you know, 2008. So 2024. So that was 16 years ago.
Well, so one of the last.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things you touched on was, you know, you were a finance major, so you liked being able to look at the numbers of things and kind of see how things shook out. And I think that, unfortunately, is one of the perspectives that a lot of guys that end up in the service industry didn't have. You know, my dad started a service company when he opened his in 1977 as kind of a new career. But, you know, he didn't have a business degree. He didn't have a finance degree. So a lot of those things that he had to learn about how some of it works, you know, he had to kind of fumble through some of it on his own. And I see customers of mine every single day that have that same thing. They go and, you know, they've been a service tech for several years, and, you know, then they get their license, they want to go out and do their own thing, but their biggest struggle is they don't have the formal business side of it, so it takes them a little bit of time to figure some things out. And also, unfortunately, that's why we see, at least in the state of North Carolina, restaurants and primarily HVAC, but primarily restaurants and trade businesses are the number two failed businesses in the state. And a lot of it is because these guys get into those two different fields without any understanding of the financial side and how they've got to learn to operate.
Yeah, I mean, we literally see that every day. And frankly, that's one of the reasons that a group like Redwood exists, is because we have that skill set. And a lot of the businesses that we partner with, they know enough to be dangerous, but they weren't classically trained. And when you don't have a level of sophistication on the finance side of the business, it's hard to get to 20, 30, 75 million of revenue. And, you know, a lot of the people that we partner with, they started, you know, in a truck, turning a wrench, then became a service manager, became a GM, then maybe started their own business. And they never had the time or luxury to stop and say, all right, let me learn, you know, the nuances of reading a P&L. Let me learn the nuances of, you know, inventory control. And by the time they look up, you know, they're like, oh God, we need to figure this out. And again, that's one of the values, I think, a group like Redwood that we bring to our partner companies.
So as you got into the strategy group and kind of stepped into service and trades initially, where, like, was there a certain company you started with, and kind of what was, how did you start with that company? Were you doing just financial analysis, or how did you walk into that new role at the time?
So ServiceMaster was the parent company of multiple brands. Some of the brands are big national companies: Terminix Pest Control, True Green Lawn Care, ServiceMaster Clean, Merry Maid. So ServiceMaster owned all these different home service companies, and it was our job on the strategy group to help work with these businesses, all these different business units, on game plans and strategies to grow top line and bottom line. So it was a great entry into home services because I got to learn multiple trades. I got to see the business from almost every angle: the operation side, the sales side, the marketing side, the finance side. So this SWAT team, there were 8 or 9 of us on this strategy team. It was our job to just help these different business units game plan for growth. And after doing that for 2 years, I had a really good high level understanding of the growth drivers of this industry. And after doing that for two and a half years, I got an itch to not only consult in this strategy role, but to actually be in a business unit and be a part of a team that got to execute on these strategies. And so I left after 2.5 years to go work for one of the business units. And that started this kind of trajectory of mine where every 2 years I moved around to a different business and a different role, and was just soaking up as much as I could. And not only soaking up what was working, but also taking mental notes of all the things that weren't working, which is what led me to eventually leave and start my own business.
What were, just for, I guess you could say shits and giggles, but also for, you know, knowledge base of people listening, you know, what were some of your main KPIs that you saw were driving business, and what were some of yours that were having the most issues for people that you could almost pinpoint from each one? And then as a follow-up to that, your growth with this company, was your growth done through organic growth, or were you guys acquiring other companies to grow, or what was the plan with that?
Yeah. So let's start with the second question first. So on the M&A side, all of these large companies have organic and inorganic growth strategies. ServiceMaster was no different. So obviously we spent a majority of our time on organic growth initiatives because that is the healthiest way to grow. But there were robust M&A functions that looked to acquire new businesses, and that was a big part. And, you know, ServiceMaster would literally acquire hundreds of businesses a year across its different platforms, whether they were pest control, lawn fertilization. And so the answer to that question is both. And then on the KPI side, it really depended on the business. Every business had its own challenges, but I guess you're asking if there were some, you know, common denominators across. And I think,
correct,
at least back then, you know, in 2008, when I was there, that was obviously a hard time in the economy. And so I think, you know, two of the biggest areas that we focused on was employee retention, because it's very expensive to churn through technicians. And so there were lots of initiatives, not just around hiring talent, but how do you retain talent? And the second big focus was around marketing effectiveness. And, you know, especially as digital marketing was becoming more prevalent, and back then people were moving away from direct mail and moving away from yellow pages and moving more to digital, trying to figure out how to optimize your spend, you know, not only how much to spend, but where to spend, and the different metrics around digital marketing. Those were two of the major focus areas.
So how long were you there? I think you said it was about 3 or 4 years. And then, you know, where did you guys start, and how much were you able to grow in that 4 years through these multiple different strategies?
Well, I was with ServiceMaster for 12 years, but I was in the strategy group for about 2.5, and then spent the next 10 years after that moving around through different business units. And, you know, I'd like to think we accomplished a lot during those times, both within the strategy group of supporting the different business units. And then when I took roles working directly for some of the businesses, you know, we worked on a lot of cool things. And there were a lot of really good people, really strong leaders within these companies. But ultimately, I thought for my career, I don't want to be a part of some big corporate entity that, you know, my efforts will only impact the business so much. I wanted to be able to start my own business where I can write my own rules, create my own values, and ultimately be able to impact the business in a meaningful way. So that was kind of the catalyst for me daydreaming about Redwood and building this business.
So speaking of that, let's start transitioning to that. So, you know, starting your own business, you were looking to disrupt the industry and how things were done investing wise in the home service, in home service companies. So, you know, when did you initially start putting things on paper for Redwood, and then talk about how you kind of developed that and then took it from there?
Sure. So it might sound crazy, but I spent probably the last 10 of my 12 years at ServiceMaster daydreaming about starting my own business. And the last 3 years I was at ServiceMaster, I was with a business unit called Terminix Pest Control, very large pest control business, one of the largest in the world. And that business was buying small pest control companies literally once a week. And a majority of the time when they would buy a pest control company, they would rebrand the business to make it a Terminix brand. They would oftentimes put their own people in these businesses. They would centralize most of the back office functions. So they would strip out the call center, strip out marketing, strip out HR, strip out accounting, and do those centrally somewhere else. And the business, Terminix, was buying these really high performing pest control companies and essentially just turning them into a branch location. And so these businesses would all of a sudden not be so thriving anymore and not be growing 20 to 30% annually. And so I was thinking to myself, there has got to be a better way to invest in the home services space than to do it this big corporate way where you just kind of strip the entrepreneurial spirit out of the business.
And you saying that, I was going to say, you saying that, no, I was going to say, you saying that, I've seen that firsthand, especially in the last several years. I've had multiple customers of mine that were either purchased or sold. I've seen some that it's gone very well, and I've seen some that it's gone very south very quick. And I think it's because, you know, they were buying, no, Terminix was buying these local companies essentially, and then they're losing that local relationship is kind of how it sounds. And I watched the same thing happen with one of the companies that I was, you know, doing several million dollars with. Then once they sold, they almost just stripped them, bit parted them out, and then half the people left and it fell apart. So I've seen it go both ways.
Yeah. And so I had a front row seat to that for a couple years, and that was, you know, 2017, 18, 19, that time frame. And late 2019, I started to really get serious about going and doing something on my own. I felt that in my 12 years at ServiceMaster, I learned the home services space. So I know it from a, you know, a business standpoint. I had seen lots and lots of things that went really well and lots of things that were happening that I thought just made no sense. And so that kind of is where the Redwood story started. And a few of my colleagues and friends within the home services space had left to go do their own thing. And most of them went to private equity to get money to back their strategy. And I thought to myself, if I go raise money from a private equity firm, I'm going to end up right back where I started with, you know, stripping costs out and, you know, doing all these corporate things that are not good for the long term. So I said that the only way I would leave this career at ServiceMaster was if I could find a family that had private money that was willing to back me and my vision and allow me to do it the right way. And so in early 2020, I approached a family here in Memphis that I go way back with, and they're super successful investors and have had, you know, really good careers of their own. And I approached this family and said, hey, here's what I want to do. I think there's a way to invest in home services differently. I don't want to raise money from private equity to build this. I want the rope and the patience to build this the right way. And are you guys interested in doing this with me? And they called me 3 days later and said, let's go. And that was in March of 2020. And that's the start of Redwood.
And talk about a fun time to start a business.
So my timing has been impeccable. I joined Wall Street in 2007 at the start of the financial collapse. And I started a business 2 days before the airports were shut down for COVID. So I really know how to time things well.
I know all about that. My wife and I were on a cruise with my distributor when they locked the country down. So when we were coming back into the port in Miami, they were shutting the port down, and they had the other four boats that had left the day before came in right behind us. And I've never gotten off of a cruise boat faster in my life. I think they had two customs agents per boat, and they literally just were like, go on, go ahead, go ahead, go ahead, go ahead, get out of here, go on. It was crazy.
Well, there are worse places to be stuck than a cruise ship. So at least
I'm glad we weren't stuck. I know. I'm glad we weren't stuck floating around on that thing for 3 months, though. That would not have been fun.
Yeah, I agree. So yeah, that's kind of how this all came about.
So when you started it, did you already have any companies in mind that you were thinking you wanted to go, you know, pitch becoming an investor in? Or did you develop that once you knew, you know, where you stood financially with funding?
So the answer to your question is no, I did not have a business in mind. I didn't even have a trade in mind when I left. I just knew there was a way to invest in home service companies where you almost do the opposite of corporate America, where you find high performing businesses and you keep the owner in the business. You keep all of the key functions, call center, marketing, accounting, all of that. And you don't get in the way, you just add value. That was the whole idea. And so when I left Terminix and ServiceMaster in March of 2020, the first thing I did was I had to pick what verticals that I wanted to focus on, what trades. And there was a lot of analysis done, and you know, me and my partners, this family that backed me, we landed on residential HVAC and plumbing. I liked the space a lot for a variety of reasons. And so that was kind of the first step is narrowing down the focus into what trades we wanted to be in.
Now, I know, I'm trying to remember when you were looking through the different companies that were part of ServiceMaster. I know you had American Home Shield, which dealt with a lot of plumbing, electrical, and heating and air. But did you guys have any plumbing or heating companies outside of that underneath your umbrella?
No,
That was truly a complete shift from the types of services you've dealt with.
Yeah, it was a difference. We did not have plumbing or HVAC companies within the ServiceMaster portfolio, other than, like you said, the fact that contractors, third-party contractors, do work for American Home Shield customers. But to me, you know, the skills that I developed and the knowledge that I soaked up in my 12 years at ServiceMaster were not trade-specific. It was more about consumer services. How do you market to homeowners? How do you drive operational efficiencies through, you know, technicians and call centers? And so for me, it was less about, you know, what trade do I have experience with, and more about where do I think there is opportunity for disruption and opportunity to, you know, build something special. And that's how we landed on HVAC and plumbing and electrical.
So as you built your team in Redwood, when did you make your first investment in a Redwood partner? When did you really put everything into action for the first time? And how much infrastructure did you build in terms of training, support, stuff like that, before you actually went and pitched to a company to bring them into the fold?
Yeah. So March of 2020 is when this started. We spent a couple months just strategizing and getting all of the, you know, all the infrastructure, bank accounts and stuff set up here. And then within a couple months, we hired our first hire. His name is David Katz. He also came from Terminix. So he joined probably 60 to 90 days in to help build out the operation side of the business. And the business really took off and kind of had its first, you know, aha moment when I was introduced to John Conway in August of 2020. And I was introduced to John just by hustling on LinkedIn, trying to network with people. I found a guy here in Memphis who owns a business here, who introduced me to John. And so the three of us went to lunch in August of 2020. And at that lunch, I learned that John was the most sought after business coach in the country for residential HVAC and plumbing businesses. And so John, his background is he owned his own business, heating and air business in Memphis for 25 years. He sold it to a consolidator, continued to run it for a few years, and then left and joined a best practices group called NextStar, where he was coaching 115 businesses across the country. And when I was introduced to John, it was started as just a networking lunch. And then that lunch ended with John saying, hey, why don't we do this together? And so John joined as our COO a few months after meeting him in August of 2020. And that's when this strategy went from zero to 60, because John is so well connected in the space and has such a strong reputation that the first business we invested in and the second were businesses that John had coached at NextStar.
And I swear I've dealt with NextStar for years, and that may be why his name sounds so familiar. I never was part of any coaching sessions or anything with NextStar, but I had multiple companies that were NextStar members for either plumbing or HVAC. And I swear I've heard his name before when I was even looking at him on your team the other day, starting to get prepped for this show.
Yeah, traveling with John is like traveling with Paul McCartney, especially when you're visiting NextStar shops, because he literally wrote the book, and there's so many training videos that he created and materials that he put out. And so, you know, we'll walk into an office for one of our partner companies, and there are technicians that spent their first, you know, 30 days on the job just watching John Conway training videos. And then when he walks in, they're like, oh my God, that's the guy. And so it's just funny traveling with John, because he's so well known in the industry.
So as you built this team together, who was your first partner you brought on?
So our first partner company was a business called Right Way in Tucson, Arizona.
Okay.
That was our first business that that partnership closed in December of 2020. And Right Way was doing around $30 million of revenue back then. So a really great first partnership for us. Today, just fast forwarding a little bit, so they ended 2023 with roughly $60 million of revenue. So nice. That business has doubled, you know, in the last 36 months from an already large business to, you know, a much bigger one.
And this is a hot topic, but how much of that large growth jump is also in part due to the massive amount of price increases we've seen in the trades industry in the last 2.5-3 years?
Obviously, some of it is attributed to price, but it's a small sliver of what has driven the growth of that business. A majority of the growth has come from operational improvements that management team, who are absolute rock stars, have made over the last couple of years. You know, there's three key things we focus on. It's call count, conversion rate, and average sale. And they have increased every single one of those, or improved every single one of those over the last couple of years. And it's not just about revenue growth, their EBITDA, so their profitability has also doubled. And the improvements they've made on gross margin have driven, you know, increases in profitability as well. So most of their growth has come from just operational excellence. We've also done 4 tuck-in acquisitions in that business over the last couple of years. So okay. we've added new departments. Their plumbing business has grown. We've added a sewer division. So there's a bunch of things that have contributed to their success.
Now, did you add those as, you know, true organic, we're going to start this and add it to the company? Or did you do any kind of investment to bring, you know, another small business into to Right Way to help handle some of that? How has that strategy worked for you?
Yeah. So typically when we're adding a new service line to an existing business, let's say it's HVAC only and they want to add plumbing, we would prefer to buy a local plumbing business and fold them in and then use that as a springboard to then go, you know, really grow that new division, as opposed to just hiring, you know, 2 plumbers and saying we're now a plumbing business as well. So typically, you know, when we want to add a new service line, we're looking to start that with an acquisition.
Does that ever cause any kind of heartburn with the company that's being acquired to fold into another one? Or how do you manage that, since a lot of this is also about, you know, keeping the people in place and the name in place for the company that you guys are becoming partners with?
Yeah,
how do you do that dance?
When we do a what we call a partnership, like a new Redwood partner company, those names don't change, those cultures don't change, those management teams don't change. Everything, for the most part, remains the same. They're just now operating with the support and additional horsepower of the 29 people on the Redwood team to help them, you know, grow faster than they could on their own. But when one of our partner businesses wants to buy a small local business, those are the ones that typically get rebranded. But we're very transparent with the seller in these kind of small acquisitions about what's going to happen. And they know what they're signing up for. Oftentimes it's, you know, a high performing local team that's doing a couple million dollars of revenue and just doesn't want the headache of having to do payroll, health insurance, property and casualty. These owners just, they don't want that headache anymore. So they're willing to sell their business to one of the Redwood partner companies and then come over and continue to run their business. They're just running it under the umbrella of whoever that partner is. And so the value proposition for those sellers, for someone that's looking to kind of get out from the burden of having to run their business alone every day, they're okay rebranding their business in return for all the benefits that come along with it.
Okay, and that makes complete sense, because it allows, you know, shared services in a sense to kind of help manage that. So that makes perfect sense, and that's a great pitch. I think another thing that I notice as I look at where locations of your partner companies are, I think you guys do a good job of not dropping people right on top of each other. You know, there's some consolidators that'll own 4 or 5 companies in the same city, and you know, they're constantly just right on top of each other, and I feel like it would be really hard to not show some kind of favoritism when you've got that many on top of you. By spreading them out, I feel you can do a much better job of supporting them grow their business, because you're not trying to grow someone else that's, you know, 30 miles down the street. I know you've got a couple in Arizona, but you know, they're not all sitting on top of each other in the same cities.
Yeah, well, that's actually a key point for us here at Redwood. We are not a geographic investor. So there's lots of groups, consolidators, as you called them, that they'll pick a geography and they'll want density. And so there's the Florida investor, the Texas investor, the Pacific Northwest investor, and they go around and they have target markets that they want locations in, and they'll go buy businesses in that market. For us, we are geographic agnostic, meaning we don't care where the business is. What we're looking for are good people, good brands, good cultures. So we call ourselves the people investor. And when you pull up our map and you see where the Redwood partners are located, that's the proof that, you know, it doesn't matter about geography, it matters about people. We have a business in Fresno, California. We have a partner company in Alexandria, Virginia. And those are complete opposite sides of the US. Yep. And then you can see we have partner companies, you know, scattered everywhere in between. So for us, it's not about where the business is located. It's about who the team is, how much gas do they have in the tank, and whether or not, you know, they want to be a part of what we're building here.
So in terms of being part of what you're building, let's say day one, you've just invested in purchase, or I've just sold you my company. What is the first step that we're taking? You know, am I coming to, you know, are we doing in-house training that you're walking through kind of the process? What all do you guys offer as training support for the transition? And then how do you grow your training with these guys throughout them becoming, you know, a member of the Redwood family?
Yeah. So first of all, we would never use the phrase, you know, what happens when we acquire a business, because that's not how we look at it. Every one of the partnerships we've done, we have never bought a business 100%. Every time we do a transaction, we are making an investment in that business, and the owner is keeping a sizable piece of equity. And so we literally become partners. So it's not us going around buying 100% of a business and then trying to figure out how it fits within the Redwood family, which is a common playbook.
Yep.
We're looking for businesses that say, you know what, I want to take some chips off the table. I know I've gotten the business far, but I know I could get it way farther if I had the right team, you know, helping me, and they see the value in the partnership. And, you know, you asked what happens on day one. So the first thing is when we do a deal, when we do a partnership, we want to stay behind the scenes. So we don't fly into town and have a ribbon cutting ceremony. We don't have an all hands breakfast. You know, we want to be behind the scenes, especially early on. And so we ease our way into this partnership because we don't want to scare anyone into thinking this is something different than what it is. And so typically it's a slow roll. We try to understand, you know, where is this business? Where are the opportunities? Where is the management team struggling? And then that's where we'll roll up our sleeves and join them in trying to fix it.
Well, and I much appreciate hearing all of that as an approach, because like I said, I've dealt with the consolidators that do the exact opposite with my own customers in the past. And I like that you guys don't just have, you know, this is the playbook, this is what we're going to do. You can essentially sit back and you have enough people on your team with the experience that you analyze the business. And you can even talk to the business owner and you can say, you know, this is where we believe we can help. And then you guys kind of go from there is how it sounds.
Yeah. And, you know, for us, we're very flexible. We don't have a one size fits all approach. So we try to really understand every situation, which every situation is unique. Their challenges are unique. Their goals and what they want out of the future is unique. And so part of what we do when we're onboarding a new Redwood partner company is to get to understand, you know, what those issues are, and we'll tailor our support based on where the needs are.
No, and that makes perfect sense. Now, do you have anything in your home campus in Memphis or where the business is truly located? Do you guys have, you know, like owner summits, or do you do anything with additional training for technicians to help them as they grow in their craft, or how do you support that side of your training and development?
Yeah. So, our office here in Memphis is called the Redwood Partner Support Center. So we come to work every day to support our partners, and you have to walk by the sign when you come into the office that says Partner Support Center. So a big thing for us is training, and it's best practice sharing and collaborating across the Redwood family. We believe that, you know, the collective brain power of all of us together is going to get us much further than anybody on their own could get. So there's a variety of things we do. Number one, we take full advantage of all of the NextStar training courses. So we send technicians, we send management, we spend a lot of time and a lot of money investing in our teams every year, primarily through NextStar training courses. But then we do get together as a group. In fact, our second annual leadership summit is just 3 or so weeks away, where we're gonna bring 150 managers from across Redwood Nation to Memphis for 3 days, and their spouses. So it'll be a nice group. group here, and we'll spend a few days, you know, sharing best practices, talking about what's working, looking back at how 2023 went and what lessons we can learn from that year. And then also really important, just spending time together as a team and having fun and dinners and networking. And it's, you know, last year it was a huge success. And so, you know, we're going to plan to do that every year. It's one of the highlights of the year for us.
Now, you talk about using NextStar training, which makes sense because of John's background and everything. Are each of your partners individual members of NextStar, or do they become, you know, are they allowed access into NextStar through Redwood being a, you know, a master member of NextStar? How does that relationship work?
Yeah, so currently 13 of the 15 businesses that will soon be in the Redwood family. Today we have 14, but number 15 will be joining us here in a couple weeks. So 13 out of the 15 were already NextStar members. And so once they joined the Redwood family, it was just business as usual, you know, trying to maximize the relationship between NextStar and their business. And then two of the businesses that we partnered with were not NextStar members, but were familiar with NextStar. And so we applied, and both of those were accepted to be members. And so currently all 15 of our Redwood partner companies are active members within NextStar.
And with that, I know they get additional support from different manufacturers and different distributors that they purchase from. Do you guys do any kind of additional, you know, price support, price negotiation as part of Redwood with any of your customers, or do you leave that to the individual business because of your kind of just geographic disbursement?
So the answer is both. We, first of all, John Conway's philosophy on OEM and equipment is he believes that the brand of equipment that you sell is often ingrained in the culture of your business. And so when we do a new partnership, we do not say, congratulations, welcome to Redwood, you're now selling brand X. And
yep,
that's not up for discussion. And that happens quite a bit.
It happened to me greatly, which is why I asked that question. Because
our approach is sell whatever brand of equipment that you're passionate about. We have a full-time vice president of procurement that, alongside John Conway, the two of them have negotiated national agreements with most of the OEMs. And so what we say to our businesses, is our partner companies, is number one, keep selling what you're selling, and you might just be able to get a better pricing on it thanks to your relationship with Redwood. Or look at what this OEM is offering, and if you want to switch, you're more than welcome to. And so once our owners and our partner companies, you know, have an understanding of the different options that exist for them and the different pricing, sometimes they switch on their own. But it's our philosophy that we want our businesses and our partner companies to sell the brand of equipment that they believe in, that they're passionate about, that works for them and their employees and their customers.
No, and I completely agree with that, because the reason people buy from me is because they like buying from me. Most of the reason any business owner is buying equipment from someone isn't always because they just love that brand. A lot of times it is because of the person they're buying it from, the support they get from the distributor or the manufacturer, and, you know, how they are taken care of, you know, in terms of support. And I've seen multiple times where companies will come in and they'll become part of the Consolidator brand, and all of a sudden they've got to start selling this line of equipment and they've got to sell this. And I'll be the first one to tell you, every manufacturer makes a good piece of equipment. There's some that have their quirks here and there, but if it's put in the right way, most of the time you're going to be in good shape. But when you start seeing people being moved and pushed around, one of the reasons I think there's been a lot of trouble with companies that get consolidated is because they lose the support structure they had and they have to learn a complete new one again. And that just really, I feel, is more of a setback than a step forward in a lot of cases. And with you guys not disrupting that, outside of how you're disrupting other things, but not disrupting the actual flow of the business, I feel that helps you bring a partner in and really start to be a partner, as opposed to they just became a partner and now you're changing how they do everything.
Yeah, and that comes back to, you know, the corporate America mindset and us trying to do the opposite of what, you know, a big corporation would do. When a big corporation buys a business, they are going to tell them, this is the brand of equipment you're selling. We have one national agreement and you have 30 or 60 days to figure out how to get it done. And so we do the opposite of that. We say, keep doing what you're doing. The reason we wanted to partner with you in the first place is because you're successful and you know what you're doing and you have passionate views on certain things, and we don't know better than you. So for us to come in and start telling you how to run your business kind of defeats the whole purpose. And so our whole mindset is, how can we support the businesses that are in the Redwood family to grow faster and further than they could on their own? That's what it all boils down to. And growth just isn't financial growth. Growth is also of the people. And so, like I said, we invest a lot in training. We've, you know, increased people's compensation plans. We've added bonuses. We've done lots of cool things so that it's not just the financials that are growing, but it's our teammates as well.
And with that kind of said, I know I wanted to give you, if you were to pitch someone right now, which there are a lot of people that listen to the show, this may be the great time to pitch potentially a new partner. You know, what are the three things that you would say to someone that's considering this to think about on their own before they even reaching out? You know, because I'm sure you have conversations with people all the time that just aren't really to the spot yet, but there's got to be something you say, hey, well, think about this, look at this, look at this, think about how that affects you, and this is what we can do to help. You know, what would be three things you would tell someone that's considering it right now that would help them, push them over the edge to reach out and maybe consider becoming a partner?
Yeah, well, first of all, that's just not really how we operate. I don't go around pitching Redwood to anybody. Typically, the way it works is, I just kind of explain what we do and how we do it. And for some people that resonates, and for others it doesn't, and that's totally okay. In fact, most of our current partner companies were not looking to do a transaction. They just heard about what we're up to, and it's very different than the way the industry is typically run. And so they want to understand a little more, and, you know, baby step, and the next thing you know, we're where we need to be. So I would say that when I do talk to people and they want to understand, you know, how to position themselves, the first thing I mention is you need to kind of get an understanding for yourself on what it is that you want. And there's a few ways that someone can exit their business. Someone could say, you know what, I have kids in the business and my plan is to sell it to my children. And so that's what they want. That's great. There are other people that say, I want to try to sell my business to employees. And that's pretty complicated to do, but there are people that have said, that's my exit plan. I want to sell my business to an employee or a group of employees. Then there's kind of a third set of people that say, I want to sell my business either today or in the future. I want to sell 100% of my business, and I'm willing to stick around for a few months, but I'm done. I'm retired. I want out. I want to take the value that I've created for this business, and I want to retire or move on. And that's what, by the way, most people do that. And then there's this fourth bucket, which is where Redwood comes in. And our model is for people that don't want to ride out into the sunset, but want to sell part of their business, get some liquidity, take some chips off the table, but want to keep working and believe their business can do more and want to stick around and be with their team and their brand and their culture, but, you know, want to do it with the support of someone like Redwood that has sales coaches, marketing coaches, procurement coaches, accounting coaches, and they want to try to go after the market with the support and horsepower of a group like ours. And that's typically the type of owner that fits well within what we're doing.
Well, that's another topic we've discussed on the show for years is most people, unfortunately, don't have a succession plan. So, you know, there's that group that, like you said, they've got kids in the business, but maybe the kids don't want anything to do with it. Some of them want things to do with it. So I think, you know, having the opportunity to potentially become a partner with someone, if you don't really have a plan for that, is a huge benefit too.
Yeah, 100%. That's why we exist. We exist to be a different type of option for someone that, you know, doesn't want to sell 100% of their business, but, you know, 99% of their net worth is tied up in the business asset. And yep. That's a risky endeavor, right? When 99% of your wealth is in one bucket or one basket, that's a lot. And so, you know, part of the value we bring is we allow somebody to, like I said, take some chips off the table. And now they, you know, financially, they know they're going to be taken care of, but they still have gas in the tank and they want to run double, triple, quadruple their business and then make, you know, significant money on the piece of the business that they left in, the equity they left in the business.
Well, Richard, I really appreciate all of your knowledge and your information today. If anyone is interested in more information, I would tell them to go to redwoodservices.com, or if there's anywhere else you think would be good for them to take a look at, just to kind of learn what you guys are doing. I really like it. I think it is a great, fresh approach on developing partners as opposed to just buying companies. I really like it. I appreciate it from, you know, not only the perspective of a distributor that, you know, we always want our customers to either have some other investment to help them grow, but it's also, you know, we want to see them grow and us help be able to grow with them and keep those relationships. So I think that's, you know, a great thing to hear from someone like yourself, you know. And I also think it's good for people to know that there's other options when you're looking for the future of your business and looking to learn different things. So I encourage any of you guys that are listening that are working on trying to figure out the next steps with your business to go and look at someone like Redwood Services and look at these other people and talk to people and kind of start figuring out what your real plan is, because there's other things that can help you build your business. So Richard, I really appreciate it. Is there anything else that you'd like to leave, you know, anybody with before we start to wrap up?
No, I appreciate it. And there's lots of really good investors out there that, you know, would be happy to talk to people. And I think Redwood is one of those. And if anyone's interested in having a conversation or just learning more, if I can be a resource to anybody, you know, I'm happy to give back to an industry that's given so much to me.
No, and I completely agree with that. So Richard, thank you so much for your time. Trade Crew, thank you for listening, spending some time with us. Please go follow the show on Instagram and TikTok at hvac.rnd, as well as on LinkedIn, Trade Hounds, or Facebook as the HVAC R&D podcast. Also, please follow our friends at Bosch and the AHR Expo after the discussion we had about what they've done with us over the last several months and what's coming in the future. And if you are listening to us on your favorite streaming platform, please follow the show, like us, rate us, leave us a review, share us with your friends and your trade crew. If you want to work with us, go drop me a line through hvacrnd.com. Check out the website, go through the swag shop. Make sure to use discount code AHR for 25% off anything you guys get, like the sweet beer pong set that Richard was talking about earlier. But thank you so much for listening, everybody. I appreciate it, and I will see y'all again soon. Peace.